Hello, my friend. Welcome back, or welcome to Something for Everybody, the podcast to help those who listen feel more loved and connected through story sharing and deep insights. My name is Aaron Mashbitz, and today is a solo episode of the podcast where I'm discussing transgender athletes in elite sport. And in other news, this podcast is brought to you by Amare. Amare is the mental wellness company, and I use their products every single day. So go ahead and click the link in the show notes below, scroll through all of their products, and see which ones might work best for you and your wellness needs. Then, once you get to checkout, use code EVERYBODY for $10 off your entire order. Now, on to episode 247 of Something for Everybody. Hello, my friend, and welcome to Something for Everybody. My name is Aaron Mashbitz. Today is a solo episode of the podcast, and I'm discussing transgender athletes in elite sport, specifically this topic. Nothing else regarding this topic, just transgender athletes in elite sport, because I feel like I am qualified to touch on this subject with some finer nuanced details that I think will be very important to the overall context of the conversation. Because really, what's most important about these conversations is that anytime we talk about transgender athletes, we're still talking about real human beings who have dignity and value and deserve our respect, our love, and our attention, and also deserve our utmost honesty when speaking about these subjects so that we can treat them and anyone who might be in this category with the utmost respect and value that they deserve and give them the best chances to succeed in whatever domain they choose to be in. I think that's missed in this conversation, whether it's about transgender in elite sport or any other conversation. We're always talking about real human beings with real feelings and emotions, and we have to take that in consideration. I know these are delicate topics and some people feel very strongly in one way or another, but we really do have to look at the facts, have to look at reality. We have to think about sort of these three buckets of inclusion, fairness, and safety, and which one is more important. And those three ideas are all very, very important values. And I think some of them take the lead in different domains. And why I feel that I can have a strong opinion that might be a little more balanced than most is because I grew up playing baseball. I played Division I baseball, was a Division I All-American, and so I understand what elite sport looks like. I understand the hard work, the dedication, the determination it takes to reach the very highest level of college athletics. And I know people who've played in professional, and I know what it takes to do that. So I played at a really high level in a very hard sport of Division I baseball. And not everyone is included. Not everyone makes the team. Not everyone gets a scholarship. And those are lessons learned throughout your life because you're not gonna get everything that you want. So inclusion is an amazing idea and I stand by it, but there are some aspects of life where not everyone is included, and that's okay because you may not get the job. You may not be invited to the party. You may not get the scholarship. You may get cut from the team. You may not be good enough yet. All of these are valuable lessons that we can learn to build resilience over time so that we can understand how to handle setbacks, challenges, obstacles, and overcome these things to thrive and flourish in our life as the best version of ourselves. And so, yes, inclusion is an amazing idea, but we have to look at it in a broader context of how we can fuel our growth with challenges and setbacks and overcoming these types of obstacles. So we can't create this ultra safe society where everything is cushy and perfect all the time. That's just not how life works, and we can never ever make life perfect. We have to be anti-fragile to be able to bounce back, get back up, hit the speed bump, get back up, hit the speed bump, get back up, and continue to move forward and thrive to be our most authentic, genuine, best version of ourselves. So I learned that through sport, and that's very important. But then I also became a professional wrestler. And in professional wrestling, that is a performance art. It's a sport. It takes athleticism. It takes skill. It takes practice. But ultimately, it's a predetermined performance art. And in that, I've said this multiple times, maybe not on this podcast, but on the other work I do with You Are Loved and Experience Wrestling, trying to create mental health resources and inclusion and diversity in professional wrestling. So these ideas are very important to me, and I'm doing a lot of work in that space. And so I think professional wrestling has the ability to be the most inclusive sport or performance in the world. Because the beauty of professional wrestling, if you don't know The Rock, Stone Cold, Steve Austin, all that stuff, that WWE, that's professional wrestling. We have the ability to create our own story. So anything is possible. And so in professional wrestling, inclusion is such a great value to have because everyone can be included. Not that everyone needs to be a wrestler, but everyone can be included in the idea of professional wrestling because it's such a niche thing. And most people who love professional wrestling maybe were outcasts or got bullied and they found professional wrestling and they fell in love with it and allowed them to be who they are and gave them the strength and courage to move forward. And that sport and that performance art and that community can be, oh my God, so inclusively beautiful. And transgender athletes can be a part of that and create their own stories and create their own art. And it's such a magnificent thing. But it's much different than, say, baseball or soccer or football, where the physical advantages can sort of can be more important and overtake this inclusion aspect. And then we start to think about, okay, what's more fair, what's more safe, and what value is more important in this certain context. So I think we're thinking about transgender athletes. It has to be sports specific, also context specific, and also performance specific. And so also one of the issues when having these conversations, if you say anything of the sort that is not, you know, fully in line with the ideology that they should be included in everything all the time, then you're labeled a bigot or a transphobe, and then the conversation can't even move forward. I'm trying to move the needle forward by understanding differences in domains and where they fit in, where it doesn't work, where it might work, where inclusion works, where safety and fairness are more important, and we have to be able to talk out our ideas. I mean, I'm literally just talking through these ideas with you right now. I may look back on this episode 2, 3, 4 years from now, and it may not age well, or maybe it'll age really well because we start having these more in-depth conversations about different domains, different contexts, different sports, what works, what doesn't, not just this like catch-all phrase that all people need to buy into all the time. Of course, trans lives matter. Like that's a stupid thing to say because they're human beings. They're real human beings. Of course they fucking matter. Everyone matters. Everyone has immense value. I've been saying people are loved since I started my nonprofit, and I believe that wholeheartedly no matter the circumstance. But just because that's true doesn't mean that trans women can be in female sports. I mean, that's really the conversation we're talking about. And so when we have these discussions, we have to think broader. We have to open our perspective. We have to zoom out a little bit and see the bigger picture. Understand first that we're talking about real life human beings. So we have to be respectful. We have to see their dignity. We have to see their value as human beings because it's intrinsic and it can't be taken away no matter what. But we also have to think about the context specific, the sport specific, the performance specific, the difference between playing professional baseball in at elite level or being a professional wrestler. Both are highly competitive, highly athletic, but one's a sport, one is a performance art. One can be extremely inclusive, so inclusive, the most inclusive performance art or sport in the whole world. The other is about merit, about excellence. I mean, merit and excellence still play a role in professional wrestling. You have to be good at what you do. You have to be safe in the ring. You have to have charisma. You have to have intelligence. You have to be able to move and talk and all of these things. But those are all skills that you can develop over time. Being a great athlete also takes some biological and physiological factors. Also, you can, of course, work hard. You can work hard in anything and achieve great things. But there's difference in those things, and we have to make sure we understand those differences when we're talking about where do trans athletes fit in this picture and how can we be the most fair and the most safe and the most inclusive we can be by understanding the full context of the picture and what actual sport or performance or context we're speaking about. And so I'm about to go into this study. All the information I'm about to discuss is from this study published in July of 2022 called Trans Women Elite Athletes, their extra percentage relative to female physiology. And it was published in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health. I just wanted to say that stuff off the top. And so those that maybe clicked on this from the YouTube title or just regularly listen to my podcast, I'm trying to do the best I can to have a very caring and kind debate. But there are also some facts that have to go into play that we have to take into consideration when looking at these sorts of things, real facts, real physiology that go into play here that make fairness and safety a little bit more important than inclusion. And that's not everywhere all the time. That's just specifically thinking about here, trans women in elite athletes, right? Because there is an increasing debate on whether trans women athletes should be included in elite female competition. Again, we're speaking solely about elite female competition, elite female competition. So elite sports are divided into male and female divisions because of the greater athletic performance displayed by males. Without the sex division, females would have little chance of winning because males are faster, stronger, and have greater endurance capacity. Male physiology underpins their better athletic performance, including increased muscle mass and strength, stronger bones, different skeletal structure, better adapted cardiorespiratory systems, and early developmental effects on brain networks that wires males to be just a little more inherently competitive and aggressive. Now, this is not everyone all the time, but this is what we're learning. This is what we know about the male physiology. And testosterone secreted before birth, postnatally, and then after puberty is the major factor that drives these physiological sex differences. And as adults, testosterone levels are 10 to 15 times higher in males than females. That's a very important note. So really think about testosterone here. The non-overlapping ranges of testosterone between sexes had led sports regulators, such as the International Olympic Committee, to use 10 nanomoles per liter of testosterone as a sole physiological parameter to divide the male and female sporting divisions. Using testosterone levels as a basis for separating female and male elite athletes is arguably flawed. Male physiology cannot be reformatted by estrogen therapy in trans women athletes because testosterone has driven permanent effects through early life exposure. The descriptive critical review, which I'm covering and going over in this episode, discusses the inherent male physiological advantages that lead to superior athletic performance, and then addresses how estrogen therapy fails to create a female-like physiology in the male. Ultimately, the former male physiology of trans women athletes provides them with a physiological advantage over their biological female athletes. So, despite the recognition of male dominance of athletic performance, the male and female divisions have become sort of blurred as transgender women, individuals that are born as male but identify as female, athletes enter the female division. We've seen this, you know, all over the internet. The inclusion of transgender women athletes has raised concerns about the fairness of the female division for biological female athletes. That's what we're talking about here. There are irreversible changes to male physiology by testosterone throughout the life. Testosterone masculinizes the brain in utero and during early life. Testosterone drives anatomical structure design specific to the male skeleton. Testosterone drives muscle mass, muscle fiber type, and muscle memory. Most of the effects driven by testosterone cannot be reversed. Listen to that again. Most of the effects driven by testosterone cannot be reversed with estradiol or cross-hormone therapy. For many decades, it has been recognized that testosterone drives muscle mass and clear sex differences exist. For example, elite male athletes have, on average, more muscle mass than female athletes for any given body weight. Males have approximately twice the cross-sectional upper body mass and 30% more cross-sectional area of lower body muscle relative to females. The difference in muscle mass emerges during puberty as circulating testosterone level increases in boys. So as noted above, the combined effect of testosterone-driven male physiology culminates in a greater athletic performance as evidenced by the dominance in males with respect to the world records and Olympic gold medals. In strength-related sports, world records can differ from about 10 to 30% between males and females. The evidence I discuss in a moment indicates that male physiology cannot be reformatted to female physiology simply by gender-affirming estradiol therapy in a transgender woman training at a high performance level. Remember, we're talking about elite sport here. We're talking about elite sport. That's a very important factor to consider as you listen or watch this episode. The estrogen treatment regimens used in transgender women aim to lower testosterone levels within the female range. However, hormone therapy alone has met limited success in suppressing testosterone levels, with many transgender women failing to achieve the desired level. In recent studies of transgender women, one quartile failed to achieve any significant suppression, and one third failed to suppress testosterone levels despite achieving desired estradiol levels. Another study reported that only 49% of transgender women showed suppressed testosterone concentrations after 6 months or more of estrogen with the addition of anti-androgen therapy. Notably, Jaron and colleagues show that testosterone levels in transgender women decrease significantly from former male levels. However, nearly all participants maintain their testosterone levels above the female range. So yes, they decreased, but they're still above the normal female range. Whether elite, so that's an important distinction when looking at that. And so there is a dose-dependent relationship between testosterone and muscle mass. Lowering circulating testosterone levels from an average male level to under 10 nanomoles per liter should decrease muscle mass in trans women. Indeed, studies report muscle mass loss with a 5% loss for lower limb mass and 9.4% for total muscle mass loss after 12 months of estrogen therapy. But the loss of muscle mass did not, however, associate with the loss of strength or muscle fiber density or performance. For example, prior to transitioning, trans women Air Force personnel recorded a 12% faster time for the 1.5-mile run than their biological female peers that declined to a 9% difference after 2 to 2.5 years of estrogen therapy. This decline in performance is similar to a self-reported study of running times in trans women in the 12 months after transitioning. While such results represent a marked decrease in performance, the running times of the trans women group remain significantly higher than those of the biological women despite prolonged estrogen therapy. The performance benefit of prior testosterone exposure for the running test is likely attributable to not only muscle mass, but male skeletal architecture that, as discussed earlier, includes longer limbs, a narrow pelvic structure, and a greater cardiorespiratory size, all of which will not respond to changes in circulating testosterone levels in adulthood. Further to this, studies show that there is no bone mass loss in trans women after 28 to 63 months of estrogen therapy. Muscle memory is also a critical factor when considering the physiology of trans women athletes. Prior to transitioning, the post-pubertal exposure to high androgen levels relative to a biological female would increase muscle cell nuclei number and long-term benefit that is not quickly, if ever, reversed. This androgen-induced muscle memory effect has been used to argue that a 2-year sanction from elite competition is not sufficient for those athletes found to have consumed exogenous androgens because of the potential ongoing athletic performance advantage. So there's a lot of factors to be considered here. because testosterone drives much of the enhanced athletic performance of males through in utero, early life, and adult exposure. Many anatomical sex differences driven by testosterone are not reversible. Many anatomical sex differences driven by testosterone are not reversible. Hemoglobin levels and muscle mass are sensitive to adult life testosterone levels, with hemoglobin being the most responsive. Studies in transgender women and androgen deprivation treated cancer patients show muscle mass is retained for many months, even years, and that concomitant exercise mitigates muscle loss. Given that sports are currently segregated into male and female divisions because of the superior male athletic performance, and that estrogen therapy will not reverse most athletic parameters, most athletic performance parameters, it follows that transgender women will enter the female division with inherent advantage because of their prior male physiology. That's what they found in this study in 2002. Estrogen therapy does not affect most of the anatomical structures in the biological male that provide a physiological benefit. Hemoglobin levels are lowered by estrogen therapy, and consequently, maximum aerobic effort may be lower. But this parameter will only be manifested if testosterone levels are suppressed to the levels within the biological female range and maintained for extended periods of time. Reported studies show it is difficult to continuously suppress testosterone in transgender women. Given that the percentage difference between medal placings at elite level is normally less than 1%, there must be confidence that an elite trans women athlete retains no residual advantage from former testosterone exposure, where the inherent advantage, depending on sport, could be up to 10 to 30%. Current scientific evidence cannot provide such assurances, and thus, under abiding rulings, the inclusion of trans women in elite female division needs to be reconsidered for fairness to female-born athletes or biological female athletes. That's what I think. That's my take on this topic. I hope I gave you something to digest, something to understand, something to think about. Really think about the stuff that I started with at the top. All of the facts and information and scientific data that I've provided you with here. And please consider broadening your perspective, opening up your mind, and considering all different avenues and points of view as we try to treat these people like real human beings, because every person on this planet matters, every person has value, and we have to see the human in them as such. And they deserve to be seen, felt, heard, and loved. So we have to have conversations about these topics so we can do what's best for the majority of people. We can't do the best for everyone all the time. It's impossible. But we can be inclusive sometimes, fair, and provide safety. Like, all of these three things are strong metrics and values that we have to look at and consider. But we also have to look at the facts, we have to look at reality, and we have to take that in consideration and move forward with those best practices that will be the best for the most number of people. Thank you for your time and attention. I'll see you next time. Thank you very much for tuning into that episode. What idea stood out to you the most? If you found that episode beneficial at all, please share it with a friend, because the podcast grows from people like you sharing it with people like you. And don't forget to leave us a rating or review on Spotify, Apple, or even on Good Pods. But the absolute best way to support this podcast is by becoming a supporter via Patreon. Patreon directly supports me, this podcast, and my mental health nonprofit called You Are Loved. So please click the link in the show notes below, scroll through all the tiers, and maybe find the best one that works for you. So I thank you and appreciate you in advance. But most importantly, above all else, please, please take good care of yourselves and others. And I'll see you next time. Lots of love. Cheers.